Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of Yins Are Good. I am your host, Tressa Glover, and I am so glad you are joining us. Yins Are Good, we're a podcast that is sharing the good stuff, good stories about the good people who have made our lives better, have changed us, changed our lives in some way. Any acts of kindness, any good deeds. Giving a shout out to maybe someone we never had a chance to thank. That's what we're doing here. And if you want to share your story, phone number, everyone, say it with me now, 1-833-399-GOOD. Or, of course, you can send us an email. It's an easy one, yinsaregood@gmail.com. And I actually want to mention that I understand some of you may be not as comfortable leaving a voicemail, of course, and so you want to go the email route, which is awesome. But again, if you also wanted a little more anonymity, that is totally fine too. You know, you don't have to give us even your first name. You know, if you wanted to sign your email something like Grateful in Glenshaw, yeah, Appreciative in Aspinwall. Oh, I could do this for hours, but I will not put you all through that, of course. You get the picture. In whatever way you want to get your stories to us, that's absolutely fine with us. And we have such a great episode today for you. In addition to a fabulous story, we have another installment of our Yinzer Spotlight, right, which highlights a person, or group, or organization who's specifically doing good in their community. And then the first installment, if you will, of How Can I Help? Which is pretty much what it sounds like, but it is an opportunity for all of us to help our neighbors in need in some way. And so we're going to highlight something that's going on where we all could lend a hand, can help someone out. And with that, it is time for our story. So this story comes to us from Jody, aka the Jode, and he lives in the South Side. My story of kindness is about the person who originally brought me to Pittsburgh and therefore changed my life forever. I had been out of high school for a few months and not really doing much, figuring out what to do with my life, college, job, etc. I got a phone call from a friend that I knew from my hometown and had moved to Pittsburgh a few years earlier. It was a Sunday, and she had been in town for the weekend and just wanted to stop by to say hello on her way back to the burg. She did. After catching up a bit, I told her what was going on in my life, which at that point was not much at all. She invited me to come to Pittsburgh with her for the week just to get away and have some fun, and that she would drive me back the following Friday. I accepted. That first night in Pittsburgh for me was amazing. She knew a lot of cool places to hang out, had a ton of friends that I was introduced to, and was basically the world's best tour guide. I was hooked right away. At the end of the night, she said, "You know, if you ever wanted to move here, you can stay with me until you get on your feet." Again, I accepted. The rest of the week consisted of me roaming around the city while she was at work, not too far from the apartment because I didn't want to get lost, which I did anyway. And then we would venture out in the evenings to check out local theaters, coffee shops, and so many of the things that Pittsburgh had to offer. All in all, it was a great, eye-opening, comfortable, amazing week. I knew that I wanted to be here. I moved a week later. Fast forward 24 years and I'm still here. There were a couple of moves to different towns and states for small periods of time, but I always knew that Pittsburgh was where I would make my home. I've met so many great friends here, as well as my wife, and we just shared our 10-year anniversary. All of this could not have happened without my friend, Lori, making a short pit stop on the way through her day just to say hello. You know what I love about that story? The simplicity of it. Right? Like a friend just stopping by to check in on another friend. And it's just that idea of we never know where change is going to come from. We never know what form it's going to come in. You know, and now he looks back all these years later and points to that day as the day that ultimately changed everything for him in the days and months and years to come. So, thank you to Jody, aka the Jode, for sending us your story. And of course, to Lori, yinz are good. And now, in our Yinzer spotlight, we have the Pitt Pandemic Service Initiative. This is coming out of the University of Pittsburgh, and it was part of the university's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. I only recently learned about this and definitely wanted to learn more and to share it with all of you. And as an overview, this is where faculty, staff, students are invited to participate in service and volunteerism to meet critical community needs. And so, to tell us more about this, I had a wonderful chat with Dr. Lena Dostilio, who is the Associate Vice Chancellor for Community Engagement at the University of Pittsburgh. And so now, here is my interview with Dr. Dostilio. Hello, Lena.
Hi, Tressa.
Hello. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I'm so excited to be with you.
Do you just want to tell us a little bit just about yourself and what your job, which would be Associate Vice Chancellor for Community Engagement? Did I get that right?
Yeah, you did.
Yes. So if you just want to tell us a little bit about yourself and about what that job entails, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. My team, we are part of the Office of Community and Governmental Relations at Pitt. We lead Pitt's community-facing work. We help people to collaborate, and we help to communicate and facilitate university involvement in our broader communities. So every day that I get to go to work, it's all about connecting people inside of the University of Pittsburgh, people outside of the University of Pittsburgh, and making great stuff happen.
So let's talk about this pandemic service initiative and how did it all get started?
Sure, yeah. So, I would say within 2 weeks of the stay-at-home orders coming out of COVID-19, the university was really, we're itching to make sure that we're looking out for each other, for our neighbors. And we have a really magnetic Senior Vice Chancellor for Engagement, Dr. Kathy Humphrey, who's got this really sort of service is at the core of who she is. And she asked our team if we could think about a mechanism through which anybody could get involved, right? How can we start helping neighbor to neighbor? And so within about 10 days, we started to call on all of the community-based organizations, institutions, grassroots to big sort of regional organizations to ask, if you had the University of Pittsburgh behind you right now, what would you want us to be doing? Because it was so important to us that we helped in the best way possible, that we were really supporting the work that communities were already leading in their communities. And so we developed an initiative that helped our faculty, staff, and students volunteer their time. In fact, we made sure that every staff person at the University of Pittsburgh could volunteer up to 8 hours of their work week every week, if that made sense, within the work of their unit to helping their neighbors. And we wanted to make sure that we could forge some innovative partnerships that really met people where they were at, and also were thoughtful about the ways that we were giving our money, our products, our durable goods, food, right? If you remember back to March, it was face shields and hand sanitizer and you name it. So we wanted to get that into one place where anybody who wanted to help their neighbor could get involved. And so that's what we ended up creating through the Pitt Pandemic Service Initiative. We're pretty excited by what people were able to do and what people wanted to do. It's typical of our region. I think that's so Pittsburgh, right? Neighbors helping neighbors.
That's right.
We started out a little bit more simply, right? We started out by asking our partners, what are you working on and where do you need us? And what we heard back was pretty simple. It was, okay, we're going to need help with food distributions. We're going to need help checking in on the people that a community-based organization or a school district served, right? Making that connection, calling, seeing if there were needs to link back to resources. And we needed some assistance around some public health outreach. And more recently, as we've been within this pandemic, it's stretched out. It's, you know, I hate to say it, but it's starting to feel a little bit more like the normal, right? This is how we live our lives. I think that that sense of urgency that people first felt in March, some of that's wearing off. And yet some of our neighbors, the neighbors who may have been vulnerable to those kind of shocks and crises, are made even more vulnerable. And we're starting to see this really deepen, right? The crisis is deepening in terms of housing security. The crisis is deepening in terms of health and wellness. The crisis is deepening in educational disparities. And so as a team, you know, we wanted to really help people understand how do the areas of health and wellness, basic needs, civic participation, education, and the digital divide, how do those areas come together with these aftershocks that we're experiencing from the pandemic? And how do we get involved? How do we educate ourselves about really what does it mean in these five buckets to have disparities within this region? What does it mean to have vulnerabilities within each of these five buckets? How do we educate ourselves and how do we take action?
Has there been anything that has surprised you as you've been working in the, you know, even within those five buckets, as you had said, or anything that you've learned along the way that surprised you the most?
You know, Tressa, I don't know if anything surprised me. Well, I mean, look, I think how long this pandemic is lasting has been surprising to me. Maybe I was just being naive at the beginning, but you know, the truth is this is something that we're living with over a long period of time. And so for some people who are maybe were right at those edges of security, of housing security, of food security, you know, the length of time that the aftershocks of the pandemic go on, it you know, creates real vulnerabilities. And so one of the things that our team has been really, really mindful about is the fact is those five buckets, they intersect in this area with racial disparity, right? These challenges aren't affecting us all equally. And so for some of our Black neighbors, this is impacting them harder than it might be me, right? And so we've been really thoughtful about how do we frame this out in a way that is explicitly anti-racist, that pays attention to where there's disparity. And that means that we have to follow the opportunity. So I'll give you this really great example. You know, one of our service opportunities that I started to talk about a little bit ago, it's the Care and Connection Callers program. And so, you know, we worked with a bunch of different community-based organizations and a couple of school districts that wanted Pitt faculty, staff, and students to reach out to the people and the families that their organizations or districts served and check in with them and see how they were doing. And so we worked closely, faculty from our School of Social Work and faculty from our School of Public Health, worked with organizations, built out call scripts that helped us really be very, you know, person-centered, kind of check in. What do you need? Do you need to connect back with the United Way's 311 service line? Do you need additional resources? Well, that's been so important and you know, healthy, but the need has changed a little bit. And so now what we're doing is our Care and Connection callers are helping people sign up for the rent rebates so that we have greater housing security, so that we can start to head off at the pass some of the evictions that may occur eventually when the eviction ban is lifted. And so that's what I'm talking about, this need to follow it for the long haul. And that means that our service changes because we really have to invest with where the greatest need is.
Now, are there any other projects or initiatives that you wanted to take a few minutes to tell us about?
Sure. Well, you know, one of the things that we've been working on for some time at the University of Pittsburgh is our Community Engagement Centers initiative. So the university wanted to do some place-based work, right? What would it look like to have a university commit to a long-term partnership in a neighborhood? What does it mean for a university to become a neighbor? Like actually open up a physical space in a neighborhood that facilitates partnerships and collaborations. And that's our community engagement centers. So that's why I came to Pitt. And in October of 2018, we opened up the community engagement center in Homewood. And just now we're opening up our community engagement center in the Hill District. One of our close partners is the Neighborhood Resilience Project. and it's led by Father Paul Abernathy. They do this amazing work to interrupt gun violence. And the way that they do that is by helping neighbors to help their neighbors, right? In other words, it's not outside people coming into a community. Instead, it's a neighbor reaching out to a neighbor and helping to disrupt gun violence. And through that expertise, when COVID hit, they thought, well, we actually have done this model and it's been very effective. We can help to halt the transmission of this disease. We can actually start to impact the public health.
Just thank you for your part in all of this. And to everyone, you know, who's part of your team, I know it's so many people, but just thank you for everything that you're doing.
Oh, Tressa, it's a gift to be able to get to do this professionally. And I got to say, you're right. My team, they are amazing.
Well, thank you for being here with us. We're so happy to have you.
I wouldn't have missed it. Tressa, this is such a cool way to learn about our area, right? And I hail from Texas. So I hail from the land of y'all, and I landed in the land of yins. So this all just comes together for me.
Now, you know what that means. That's right. It is time for Name That Neighborhood. And I have brought back for the fifth consecutive time my husband, Don DiGiulio. Hi, Don.
Hi, Tressa.
Last time, you did very well.
Some might say yins did good.
Yins did do good. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of redemption from the time previous.
Yeah.
So that was well done.
Hey, thanks.
Your choices this time through are the South Side and Oakland.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Okay, and here we go. Mm-hmm. Named was once home to the largest warehouse between New York City and Chicago.
Let's go with the South Side.
Yes, you are correct. So this would be the Terminal Building. So this building actually was designed in 1898 and was completed in 1906. And in 2013, it was added to the National Register of Historic Places.
Okay.
Well, okay then. One for one. Here we go. Mm-hmm. This section of Pittsburgh was home to an amusement park from 1905 through 1909.
An amusement park? I don't feel like Oakland or the South Side are large enough to house an amusement park.
I understand.
I'm going to go Oakland with some hesitation.
Yes! Oakland, with some hesitation. None for me, though. It is correct. Yeah, so this amusement park was called Luna Park, and it was built by Fred Ingersoll, who was a leading roller coaster designer and entrepreneur, and he actually formed Ingersoll Construction here in Pittsburgh back in 1901. Hmm. So this firm built roller coasters and rides for amusement parks. So Luna Park was constructed Craig Street and Baum Boulevard and was modeled after Luna Park on Coney Island in New York, of course. And it featured, apparently, live entertainment with animal acts and acrobats and equestrians.
Wow. Any hot dog contests?
I do not know. I'm going to get back to you on that. Maybe that's where it all began.
Maybe.
This area has around 70 sets of public stairs.
The South Side.
The South Side! You are correct. Who is this man? Yes. So, now, okay, the total number of steps or sets of staircases in Pittsburgh does vary on official counts, but by any of those counts, it is agreed that Pittsburgh has the most sets of public stairs in the entire United States. And so the South Side itself has somewhere around 70 just in that area. And of course, you think about it, that really some of these steps serve as streets.
Right.
Because of the topography, how the heck do you get around with all of these hills and such? So, and actually, there in each October, there's a Pittsburgh Step Trek takes trekkers up these steps to all of these different views. And they've been doing it for 20 years. And actually, it's running right now, October 1st through the 7th.
Hmm.
And it's this great, as they say on their website, an outdoor, family-friendly, socially distanced, safe event that helps people to get out and explore the neighborhood of the South Side. So that's happening right now.
And you could literally get your steps in.
Literally. That is true. In this neighborhood, you'll find a local watering hole that's open 365 days a year.
Oh, yes. That is the South Side. And I have been to Jack's.
It is the South Side. It's true. For those who may not know, Jack's Bar is open every day of the year from 7 a.m. until 2 a.m. An iconic local watering hole. Well, Don. Mm.
I mean, I may never lose again.
It's true.
So I probably have jinxed it for myself from here on out by just saying that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think if I bring the true false back.
My kryptonite.
Yeah, then that might take care of itself there. And now it's time to help each other. And what we are talking about today is an event, a show called Off the Record. And first, I should say that I am also an actor and writer and producer. And so I have been involved with this show, Off the Record, for several years now. But it benefits the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. So such an important cause. It's an annual event happening every October at the Byam Theater downtown. Obviously, goes without saying, we are not able to perform it live this year, unfortunately. However, it's going to be a virtual event this year. So I wanted to bring on to the show Chris Rawson, who is the longtime theater critic for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and also he has produced Off the Record since its beginning in 2001. So Chris is going to tell us a bit more about the show, and you're going to find out how to donate and where to watch the show. And I will also include that information in our episode notes. So here is my interview with Chris Rawson. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Tressa, why aren't you at rehearsal?
Oh, that's a good question. I wish I were.
I mean, you've been in it so many years, and you know we rehearse for many weeks, and we can never get all the cast together because everyone's doing it as a freebie, and they have to, you know, take time off from other jobs and so on. And then 2 days before the show, it is an extreme panic. But I think we should probably start by explaining what the heck this is we're talking about. I always compare it to these old press club shows they used to have where the news media got together and made fun of the newsmakers. The newsmakers would make fun back at them, or the old Brockett and Barbara shows where they put together a whole bunch of original musical comedy songs about Pittsburgh news and newsmakers, which is what we do. We write an original show every year, about an hour and a quarter long. We steal songs that people know and write other lyrics to them, and we write a script. And then we have actors playing the governor, the mayor, you know, Jeffrey Romoff, whoever the villains of the year are. And we go through some of the news events of the year and surprise ourselves by what a good show we have. And the only reason we do is that we get a lot of very good professional actors who are willing to give us several weeks of their time. We couldn't do it this year at all because we can't, can't get together and rehearse a show. And we certainly can't fill the Byam Theater with a wonderful, happy audience the way we've been able to do for many years. So
yeah,
we decided this year to put together a sort of a retrospective, best bits of the previous shows, and then to interlard it with celebrity shout outs, people saying nice things about Off the Record, or more specifically about the Pittsburgh Community Food Bank, because that's what we're raising money for each year. Right. And that's one of the reasons to do it this year, even though we can't do a real original show, we can put on this best bits and raise money. We've already raised, I don't know, 10,000-15,000 on pledges from sponsors, and we're hoping to raise more during the telecast as people do the telecast. You see, that's old-fashioned language. The streaming, the online, whatever it is.
Whatever we call it now. So what year is this for Off the Record?
Well, this would be the 20th, or as we say, XX. We started using Roman numerals. We didn't use a Roman numeral the first year because we didn't know there'd be a second year. But this would be 20. We're not really calling it 20. It's somewhere between 19 and 20. And there's an argument about next year's show. Should it be 20 or should it be 21 or 20 and a half? Yeah, so we're calling this Off the Record 2.0.
Yes.
And the pandemic edition, and the 2.0 kind of looks like a 20, but it isn't really a 20.
So there's an MC usually, right, who runs the show.
Right,
and,
Ken Rice.
Yeah.
Ken Rice is MC again. I have to tell you, he is riotously funny every year because Ken Rice, that nice, solid newsman you see on TV, gets to let his eyebrows down and do jokes, that he couldn't possibly do on KDKA because this is Off the Record. The problem this year is it's going out. People can record it, et cetera, et cetera. So it is, in a sense, on the record. So Ken has had to dial back his humor. I mean, you understand that. He's also not playing to a live audience, so humor isn't the same thing. But he's the MC. He introduces it and gets it going. And then, as I say, we have this mixture of clips from the past and shout outs from 20 or so celebrities. I mean, people like, of all people, Mark Cuban, but more obvious people, theater people like Billy Porter and Rob Marshall and Stephen Flaherty.
And Franco Harris, I believe.
Yes, and one of the people giving us a shout out, we call her the First Lady of Braddock, but you may know her better as the Second Lady of Pennsylvania, Gisele Fetterman, and then
yes.
Peduto and Fitzgerald and Senator Casey and Sally Udine and et cetera, et cetera. What my job was to go through 19 years of Off the Record and pick out 20 to 25 segments, songs that would make up the retrospective part of the show. And I want to tell you, it was excruciatingly hard and deliriously fun because I get to rewatch so much and to rediscover things that I'd forgotten. And then I had to make decisions. I wanted to have something representing all the actors like you who've played lead parts, and I just can't do it. So I think people are going to be really happy what they see, and they're going to be people who are in the show are really going to miss what they don't see. Also fun to revisit some civic history, like who were the Ory sisters. You didn't play one of the Ory sisters, did you? They were the three witches from Macbeth.
Yes, that was it. Was Barbara Russell and Lori Klatcher and I.
Oh, what a trio. What a trio. That's remember fun. Anybody else you played in the show over the years?
I play, Attorney General Kathleen Kane. We did the play on Modern Major General. And
right.
The song was Bad Attorney General.
Right.
So
Dennis
that was
Dennis
fun.
Roddy and Bill Toland, I think, wrote that song.
Yeah.
You had some powerful lyricists behind you making your life very, very difficult.
I remember the email you sent, getting an email from you saying, "Hi, would you be interested in trying Modern Major General?" I was like, "Oh, I'm like, yes, I will. Of course, why
It's
not?"
amazing to me that people say yes. I should say that, this really is, there is a serious purpose behind this, which is to raise money for the food bank. And that's one of the reasons we want people to watch. We want them to have a good time, but we would like them to make a contribution also, because this is, of course, a horrendous year in so many ways. But can you imagine what it's like for the food bank and people who depend on it for food?
Yeah, absolutely.
Our show is going to play on the Off the Record Facebook page, which is just Off the Record PGH. That's our Facebook page, or our YouTube channel. In our 19 years, the bookkeeping hasn't been precise, but we've raised over $650,000. Well, thanks for talking to me about it. And October 8th, that would be a week from today, as we talk at 8 p.m. But if people miss it, they'll be able to catch up with it later after that.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that will do it for us here. Episode 5, Yinz Are Good. I am your host, Tressa Glover. Again, thank you so much for listening in. And until next time, be safe, be kind, be good. Thank you to Jody, aka The Jode, to Dr. Lena Distilio, to Chris Rossin, as always, to Don DiGiulio, and of course, for our fabulous artwork, thank you to Mike Rubino.